Ani, and welcome to Bom Sida, an Aboriginal news magazine program that features news, current affairs, a focus on community and culture, spotlights on entertainment and great tunes and every flavor from Aboriginal artists. I'm your host, Jennifer Ashwasagay. The Beaver Pond Forest property near Ottawa has been clear-cut despite protests from local First Nations, and now Algonquin spokesperson Daniel Amakwabi-Bernard says they'll be working to conserve the rest of the site. First Nations around the Terrace area in BC have opportunities to partner up with local businesses to get in on many of the projects in the area. Plus, former Prime Minister Paul Martin will discuss an initiative to highlight Aboriginal education challenges. And Anishinaabeg Nation citizen Darren Corbier wants to cycle across Canada to raise awareness about diabetes in Aboriginal communities. And Northwestern Ontario youth in Gull Bay have been lacing up their new skates. All these stories plus great tunes coming your way right after the news. Here's your national Aboriginal news. Activists who had been trying to stop the clear-cutting of South Highlands near Ottawa will continue to try and save what's left of that forest. Daniel Amakwabi-Bernard is a member of the Algonquin Nation and spokesperson. He says it's becoming clear that the area slated for development is both a sacred site and potential World Heritage Site.
There's more and more evidence that's mounting, huge evidence, international evidence, in fact, about this area, the South Marsh area, most likely becoming a world heritage. And I mean, the people who are writing these documents are talking about PhDs and most high scholars that are out there. So the fact that our elder William Kamada said that the forest is sacred at 97 years of age, we can see that other scholars are coming around from the world and are pledging with government, with the city of Ottawa, to stop this this destruction and this violence.
Bernard says they will continue to press government to put a stop to destroying the remaining forest and untouched areas of the South Marsh Highlands near Ottawa. The Terrace Economic Development Authority is working towards partnership possibilities in BC. The city is providing tools to local businesses around the Terrace region to help them partner up with First Nations. Evan Van Dyke is an economic development officer with TIDA. He says partnerships will benefit both First Nations and local businesses.
So businesses can gain a competitive advantage with partnering with First Nations, because a lot of these industries that come to town, they're going to need to consult with First Nations, make sure that their needs are being addressed. These projects won't go through without the approval of First Nations. So what will happen is, a lot of the times the business or the industry will award First Nations contracts for, could be things from the entire project, it could be from road building, it could be for even smaller things to laundering overalls, that sort of thing. And a lot of the First Nation communities won't have the capacity to do that internally. So what they'll be doing is they'll be looking for partnerships with local business or with business from out of town to do this work for them and then share profits. So it's our goal to encourage local business as much as possible to create these partnerships. When the bid, when the projects come through, they won't necessarily even have to quote on the project, because the First Nations will have already been awarded, the First Nations government, I should say, will have already been awarded the project.
Dyke says about 8 projects have been planned for the area, totaling over $11 billion. Projects include natural gas, pipeline, and transmission. The organization will be hosting a public forum March 1st to promote joint venture partnerships. In Yellowknife, a radio station has reported the chief federal negotiator for the Dayto land claims process is getting ready to retire. No word on when Tim Christian will be leaving his position. Christian is a lawyer and professor who has been involved with the Dayto process over the last 7 years, and he's also been involved in negotiations with other First Nations groups since about 1995. The trial for James Arthur Ray is soon approaching. The 53-year-old is facing manslaughter charges after 3 people died during a sweat lodge ceremony at his Spiritual Warriors retreat in October 2009 near Sedona, Arizona. Formal jury selection for the trial was set for February 16th, and Ray's lawyers have moved to have the case heard in another county. The Daily Courier reports that the lawyers contend that a survey shows that their client point will be unable to receive a fair trial in the Yavapai County because of what they see as excessive and unfavorable media coverage. Ray has pleaded not guilty to the charges against him. His trial is to begin March 1st. The Martin Aboriginal Education Initiative and Free the Children have teamed up to launch the local spotlight campaign focusing on Aboriginal education. Former Prime Minister Paul Martin says the campaign will help Canadians understand challenges faced by Aboriginal youth in gaining access to quality education. The campaign will also encourage students across the country to raise awareness about those issues as well. He says the campaign began to roll out this week and will continue into next week.
Every day there will be sort of course lessons going out so that young Canadians can be made aware of either the history or what has to be done. And hopefully those young Canadians will take it home. And so that it's going to be day after day for a week in a number of schools across the country. This will be made, will be laid out in front of the students and in front of their own classes. And then hopefully they'll speak to their friends, and we have seen with social media, when friends start to talk to friends, then the word spreads pretty quickly. And so what I think we're doing here is we really are building a program that hopefully will last more than a day, last more than a week, and in fact will become really part and parcel of the way that young people in this country look at the problems that we have to deal with.
Social networks, including Free the Children's Facebook page, will continue to raise awareness beyond participating schools. First Nations leaders in northern Manitoba are taking their water crises to the United Nations. The Winnipeg Free Press reports Grand Chief David Harper of MKO plans to ask the United Nations to investigate the violations of rights imposed by lack of water. That after he told a Senate committee earlier this week that the lack of running water in more than 1,000 homes in northern Manitoba is a violation of the UN Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples. The paper reports the UN recommends 50 liters of clean water are needed per person every day to meet minimum standards. Many people in the Island Lake region only get it on by 10 liters per day. A clean drinking water bill is being considered by Senate. The legislation seeks to regulate water quality on reserves, but the paper also reports that chiefs across the country have said the bill puts the cart before the water truck because few communities have the infrastructure to meet any regulations on water standards. Wet'suwet'en hereditary chiefs aren't impressed with Enbridge's offer to sweeten the deal to construct the Northern Gateway Pipeline through their territories. The Black Press reports Enbridge offered an equity stake to First Nations in an Aboriginal Economics Opportunity Package. Northern Gateway is offering 10% equity ownership in the project, which is worth $5.5 billion. The package also includes hiring as much local labor as possible, and the company maintains Aboriginal employment will comprise of about 15% of the construction force. Mike Risdale, Environmental Assessment Coordinator for the Wet'suwet'en, told the Black Press the offer hasn't changed the position of the Wet'suwet'en hereditary chiefs. He said Wet'suwet'en culture and livelihood is not for sale, and he added that Enbridge is not allowed in Wet'suwet'en traditional territory. Hundreds gathered in Vancouver for the 20th annual Memorial March for Missing and Murdered Women on Valentine's Day, and the Assembly of First Nations is continuing its call for an independent inquiry into missing and murdered Indigenous women, as well as action to end violence against Indigenous women. Four host First Nations in BC continue to see benefits from the 2010 Vancouver Winter Olympics. Tawani Joseph, former CEO of Four Host First Nations, told 1130 News the games are still paying off. Four Host First Nations had a prominent role in the opening ceremonies and also hosted a very popular pavilion. Joseph said a lot of private sector businesses want to work with First Nations, and it's not limited to BC. He said he's seeing that trend in other provinces as well. Darren Corbier has lived with type 2 diabetes for about 10 years now, and he knows full well how much diabetes has affected First Nations people. Corbier wants to bring awareness and help prevent diabetes in First Nations communities by cycling across Canada. He's entered the Pepsi Refreshes Everything contest in a bid to win $25,000 to enable him to do just that. Corbier says diabetes awareness is important because of the high rates of the disease in communities, which are also being extended to youth.
Just the high numbers in terms of, you know, where the diagnosis of diabetes is going to. Aboriginal people are in the, you know, the are probably the high-risk group, numbers approaching 50%. And I guess even more alarming about the number is that, you know, we're having children who are being diagnosed with type 2 diabetes.
But if Corbière doesn't win money in the contest, that won't stop him. He'll continue to look for funding in other venues. He wants to start his journey by July 1st from St. John and arrive in Vancouver by the end of August. Voting in the Pepsi Refreshes Everything contest goes until the end of February. You think Bay and Northwestern Ontario are playing more hockey than they used to? The community has received a donation of nearly $18,000 in hockey equipment. That's thanks to the work of Gen 7 messenger Mike Auxie and Big Hearts for Fresh Starts. Auxie says the youth were happy with the equipment.
They loved it. I mean, we had about 20 young people there, ranging from, like, you know, 4 to 15, and parents and a couple aunts and uncles and stuff like that, and yeah, they were thrilled. I mean, there was still lots of gear there, so hopefully some of the kids are lacing up and getting out on that ice.
28-year-old Auxie volunteers as a Gen 7 messenger for Motivate Canada to promote healthy lifestyles through sport in Aboriginal communities. And that's your National Aboriginal News.
Late nights, long fights, this can't be love, baby.
I think I need CPR.
South March Highlands, also known as the Beaver Pond area near Ottawa, has been clear-cut by developer despite ongoing protests by First Nations in the area. The whole area has not been cut down, however, and people like Daniel Amakwabi Bernard is working to save what's left. The area has also been deemed sacred by a respected elder. Plus, academics are backing that up and maintain the area should be designated as a World Heritage Site. Here's Daniel Amakwabi Bernard, who will tell us the next steps that the First Nations groups will be taking to save what's left of the forest.
succeeded in pretty well destroying the beaver pond forest. It's a sad thing, and however, the spirit of the forest is still there. We have people who have sent some emails and are still hearing the drums, and they feel the spirit of the forest. So the South Marsh Islands, there's still some forest around left. But unfortunately, basically, the beaver pond area is gone forever. There's trees that have, huge trees that have been fell, and that's what happened. However, our spirit, Algonquin spirit, is not down. We are still very strong. Actually, we feel even stronger now because of this. And what I'm intending to do, Jennifer, this Friday morning, a very, very special letter I will carry to Mr. Michael Chan, downtown Toronto, into his office. Me and my Mohawk brother, Danny Beaton, will carry this letter that has been prepared by Dr. Bob Abel regarding this actual very place. And in this letter, there's a really a straightforward explanation and a timeline of how things have happened there, and this letter is clearly exposed the total wrongdoing of the government and the acceptance by all government level of this violence against Algonquin people and against the animal also that lives within that forest.
So I know that you had that sacred fire burning, and you were hoping that Michael Chan was going to show up. So with what you've just told me, I don't think he showed up.
Well, Michael Chan, actually, the person who I invited was Mr. McGinty. We sent a letter to Mr. McGinty, a nice letter of invitation, along with a beautiful calendar of the beaver pond, a photograph of the beaver pond. And I emailed Mr. Chan on a numerous occasion, but I have not received a single reply from his department. It's very unfortunate that First Nation people are continue to be ignored in such a way. But we're not despairing, because there's more and more evidence that's mounting, huge evidence, international evidence, and facts about this area, the South Marsh area, most likely becoming a world heritage. And I mean, the people who are writing these documents are talking about PhDs and most high scholars that are out there. So the fact that our elder William Kamada accepts the forest sacred at 97 years of age, we can see that other scholars are coming around from the world and are pledging with the government, with the city of Ottawa, to stop this this destruction and this violence.
And is there going to be anything else that's going to happen? Like you said, on Friday, you're going to be delivering that message to Michael Chan along with Danny Beaton, and the academics are also coming together to support your cause. And are you going to launch anything else, like legally or in the courts or province?
Absolutely. We are, once this goal, this is just the beginning of a, like I've explained in the past, that this is a total violence against Algonquin Nation. And when I say Algonquin Nation, I speak for myself and all the people who support Grandfather William Kamada in this quest to save this place. And we are definitely looking into full legal actions against those who have participated, knowingly participated in destroying such a sacred site, and have committed action against Algonquin people. And I continue to say that violence against Algonquin people will not be left unanswered. So we will take every mean that we have to protect our ancestry, to protect our heritage, and to protect the heritage of the children to come. and the heritage of the actual forest itself.
That was Daniel Amakwabi Bernard, spokesperson for protesters against development in the South March Highlands area near Ottawa. The economic development arm of Terrace BC is promoting joint venture partnerships between First Nations and local businesses. The area will soon see about 8 projects from pipeline to natural gas to transmission projects worth about $11 billion. And First Nations will have first kick at the can when it comes to bidding on those projects. Evan Van Dyke is an economic development officer with the Terrace Development Authority, which is working towards promoting partnerships between First Nations and local businesses.
So TETA is responsible for promoting the growth and diversification of Terrace's economy. So it includes helping to develop economic infrastructure, facilitating new investment, acting as an advocate and advisor to local business. So we looked at different ways for local businesses to get involved in the numerous projects that are under construction or about to be happening in the region. For instance, the Northwest Transmission Line that's going to be electrifying half a dozen mines, which will be some major projects on First Nation territory. So we thought we're sort of looking for ways that we can encourage local business to partner with these local Aboriginal communities, create joint venture partnerships, and work together as these multi-million and multi-billion dollar projects come down the road.
So is there much interest in that?
Well, yes. In our community was originally built around the forest industry. So with a significant decline in the industry, we've got no sawmills operating, we're left with exporting our logs. So we don't actually have a whole lot of economic infrastructure in place in the area. So with mining activity, pipeline activity, these sorts of things, there's a lot of interest for local business and to take advantage of some of the markets and or some of the projects. So this is just another way for them to work with First Nations. A lot of First Nations will be awarded many of these projects, so a lot of interest just to basically grow their businesses in town.
Okay, and how would businesses gain a competitive advantage by partnering with First Nations in the major projects?
So businesses can gain a competitive advantage with partnering with First Nations because a lot of these industries that come to town, they're going to need to consult with First Nations, make sure that their needs are being addressed. These projects won't go through without the approval of First Nations. So what will happen is a lot of the times the business or the industry will award First Nations contracts for, could be things from the entire project, it could be for road building, it could be for even smaller things to laundering overalls, that sort of thing. And a lot of the First Nation communities won't have the capacity to do that internally. So what they'll be doing is they'll be looking for partnerships with local business or with business from out of town to do this work for them and then share profits. So it's our goal to encourage local business as much as possible to create these partnerships. When the projects come through, they won't necessarily have to quote on the project because the First Nations will have already been awarded, the First Nations government, I should say, will have already been awarded the project. They will already have the partnership in place and will be awarded the work without even putting a quote in.
Pretty cool. And I also understand that a toolkit is also available. And can you tell us about that toolkit?
So we're doing more than just a information session for local business and First Nations. We've also put together a toolkit. And what the toolkit consists of is examples of partnership agreements. It sort of gives an insight and examples of how different agreements can work. I mean, there's not always one set contract between a First Nation and a business, and some would want different agreements. So basically it just puts into perspective sort of the steps you need to take. It gives the local contact information for all of the First Nation bands in the area. So if they wanted to contact, for instance, the Haisla to speak about the Rio Tinto Alcan Modernization Project, which is a $2.6 billion project happening just 45 minutes away from Terrace, they can have a direct contact. They can speak with the person there about gaining this partnership. And so the toolkit sort of puts in place an examples of what to follow in and gives them direction on where to follow up with. So we're trying to make it as easy as possible for the local business to move forward with this initiative if it's something that interests them.
Good. And how did the local First Nations in the area input into the project or the toolkit?
Well, speaking with some local business and consultants, First Nations, we're told, you know, they were speaking to some local businesses about developing these partnerships, and there was just a general sense of not understanding of what exactly this meant or how to do this. First Nations are often just as eager as the local businesses to develop these partnerships, just, you know, for their own benefit moving forward. And of course, every First Nation government, they want to see businesses locally succeed, just as municipalities do. So we sort of put together, just based on speaking with local businesses, consultants, and just how we can make it mutually beneficial for the First Nation and for the local businesses.
That was Evan Van Dyke, Economic Development Officer with Terrace Development Authority. Now here's Sarah Bonney with Round and Round. Has marked an initiative to highlight issues in Aboriginal education. The Paul Martin Aboriginal Education Initiative has teamed up with Save the Children to launch the Local Spotlight campaign focusing on Aboriginal education. Former Prime Minister Paul Martin says the campaign will help Canadians understand the challenges faced by Aboriginal youth in gaining access to quality education.
Well, I think this is a tremendous initiative. It's one that is sponsored by Free the Children on the one hand and the Martin Aboriginal Initiative on the other. And what essentially it deals with are two things. One, the fact that the graduation rates from high school for Aboriginal Canadians is just very, very low and very unfortunate when you compare it with the graduation rates for non-Aboriginal Canadians, and it's just simply unfair. It's the result of an underfunding of on-reserve elementary schools and high schools by the federal government. It's the result of 200 years of history in which education was not used for education, but was used for assimilation. And the net result has been the kinds of human tragedies that we see. At the same time, there's not a great deal of understanding among non-Aboriginal Canadians, among the rest of us, as to what that history has meant and what's happened. And so what's really happening here is that high school students from across the country are being brought together in a big event in Kitchener-Waterloo, but then also in schools across the country, really teaching them about what happened, and hopefully giving them the inspiration to want to do something about it and to change the situation.
Mm-hmm. And why have you decided to support this campaign?
Well, because if your goal, and certainly is mine, is to turn around the situation, to help Aboriginal Canadians turn around the situation that they have inherited, then obviously you're going to focus on education, which is what I have been doing. But the same thing applies. If what you want is for Canadians to understand the situation, what better Canadians to talk to than young Canadians who are going to be leading this country for the next 50, 60 years? And what this initiative has done, and this is where Free the Children has been such an important asset to Canada over a number of different kinds of issues, is it reaches up to high school students in a way that very few other organizations or people can. And that's why I'm supporting it.
It seems that sometimes that trying to bring awareness to an Aboriginal issue is like fighting an uphill battle. And because people are either apathetic or negative, but not all of them, though. And this are just some impressions of mine from comments on the many news stories. And so how do you deal with that kind of stigma while moving your initiative forward?
Well, I certainly found in talking in universities and in high schools across the country that young people are not indifferent. They want to know more about it, and they really regret the fact that the situation has not been made available to them. You're absolutely right. Sometimes it is like pushing a string uphill, and that there is, unfortunately, a lot of indifference among Canadians. But I don't believe that that exists with young Canadians. And in fact, to be honest, I think there is an increasing awareness among Canadians generally that this is an issue that really is a major moral issue, and it's a major economic issue for Canada. So I'm quite optimistic that Canadians really are becoming more and more aware and want to do something about it, and there's no doubt about that in the case of young Canadians.
All right, and so how is the message on Aboriginal education being highlighted this week, and where are we seeing that?
Well, there is going to be this big event this week, in fact, in Kitchener-Waterloo. But then what is going to happen over the course of the week, the next week, there will be every day, there will be sort of course lessons going out so that the young Canadians can be made aware of either the history or what has to be done. And hopefully those young Canadians will take it home. And so that it's going to be day after day for a week in a number of schools across the country. This will be laid out in front of the students and in front of their own classes, and hopefully they'll speak to their friends. And as we have seen with social media, when friends start to talk to friends, then the word spreads pretty quickly. And so what I think we're doing here is we really are building a program that hopefully will last more than a day, last more than a week, and in fact will become really part and parcel of the way that young people in this country look at the problems that we have to deal with.
So is this going to become an annual event?
Well, I think that remains to be seen. Free the Children has essentially as their basic view the question of dealing with poverty and primarily child poverty. And the Martin Aboriginal Initiative says essentially that, look, there is huge child poverty among Aboriginal Canadians, and one of the main reasons is simply a lack of education and a lack of focus on that education. And that's how we have really come together. Where we go from here, I think, will depend to a certain extent on the reception and how it works. Certainly, our education programs, the Martin Aboriginal Initiative's education programs, they're continuing. They're well now anchored in a number of schools across the country, and we're going to be building on them year after year. Free the Children, I just think, is one of the most impressive organizations that I've ever dealt with, and I think that it really depends on how this one event works out and how what the reception is. But I really hope that it's something that will continue.
That was former Prime Minister Paul Martin. Darren Corbier has lived with type 2 diabetes for about 10 years now, and he knows full well how much diabetes has affected First Nations people. And Corbier wants to bring awareness to help prevent diabetes in First Nations communities by cycling across Canada. Right now, Corbier has entered his idea into the Pepsi Refreshes Everything contest, hoping to win $25,000 to help him do just that. But if he doesn't win in the contest, he'll continue to try to drum up support to make that Cross Canada cycle happen.
The reason why I applied to the Pepsi Refresh Everything project was because they're giving grant money, and I applied for $25,000. I'm hoping that with that money I'll be able to use it to finance a cycling activity across Canada, or an event going in which I'll be biking across Canada, leaving St. John's hopefully on July 1st, and then arriving in Vancouver 28th or 29th of August. The whole point is, well, I'm Anishinaabe, first of all, from the Odawa tribe of the Anishinaabe Nation, and I have type 2 diabetes. And we often run into issues with, as Aboriginal people, there's a lot of diabetes out there. So what I wanted to do was try to raise awareness of this of the disease and how it's affecting Aboriginal people. I think some of the latest records or stats indicate about half of the Aboriginal people suffer from this. So I want to raise awareness. Food is sometimes difficult to access in terms of changing your diet, because they recommend, fresh fruit and vegetables and things of that nature. But that isn't always practicable, especially in those far north communities where, you have to ship everything in. So exercise, on the other hand, is fairly straightforward. That can be, any form, chopping wood, going for a walk, sliding, skating, things of that nature. So that's what I'm doing it for.
Okay, and well, certainly riding across Canada will surely keep your glucose levels in check. And so why is diabetes awareness so important in First Nation communities?
I think that given the, just the high numbers in terms of, where the diagnosis of diabetes is going to, Aboriginal people are in are probably the high-risk group, numbers approaching 50%. And I guess what's even more alarming about that number is that, we're having children who are being diagnosed with type 2 diabetes.
So, and you were also mentioning earlier that dietary needs are quite specific, especially to keep diabetes in check. And you mentioned it's difficult for northern communities to have those fresh fruits and vegetables to accommodate diets. And are there any solutions to help the northern communities to keep diets in check?
Well, I personally am from Wukwamukong, which is sort of mid-range in terms of the remoteness, whereas some other communities are fly-in only, and those are the a lot of these communities are sort of out of sight, out of mind, and this is where it becomes difficult because of the transportation costs for these like fresh vegetables, which is recommended, or fresh fruit. I guess. One of the ideas that I had was that we could probably consider dehydrating some of those some of the apples, or like apples for example, and sending them, so you're shipping dry weight as opposed to water weight. There are other options locally if they could stick to a more traditional diet, the lean meat, the fish, the nuts and fruit that they would harvest locally, if depending on where you're at, if they were available, depending on the time of season. So, I'd be focusing, and actually I've changed my own personal diet to include more of those items wherever possible.
Okay, and so where's your idea at right now in the Pepsi Refreshes Everything contest?
I think I'm in 44th place overall. With that contest, I was looking to place either in first or second position, and as those are the ones that will be receiving the money in the $25,000 value. Initially, I came across that quite by accident, because initially I was looking at the Quaker Oats, the oatmeal, you know, the whatever the old-fashioned oatmeal is basically what I eat almost every day for breakfast. And I was looking to contact them to see if they'd be willing to sponsor part of this cycle event. And I guess either Pepsi owns them or they own Pepsi. And so when I saw the little link about the Pepsi Refresh project, I followed it and made an application to them. So we'll see how things work.
So how much longer is the contest in this round?
The voting goes to the end of February. So we've got about another, 16th, I think, about 12 days of voting left. Initially, things went really well. I went from 58th position to where it's currently at, around 44, I think. And since then, though, it seems to have stayed in and about that range, 44, 46. I've been encouraging people on my contact list through Hotmail to log in and vote, and I was hoping that the numbers would be better. The money isn't absolutely necessary for this event to occur. I'm going to be doing it. It would just be nicer to do it in style, I guess, if I had $25,000. It would pay for that money was going to be used to pay for four or five students to come along with me, and be part of the Indian Cycle event. That's the group or the demographic that I'm trying to reach primarily.
That was Anishinaabeg Nation citizen Darren Corbier. Now here's The People from Equaquan Mills.
It's a beautiful day.
Here it comes again, the storm, the wind, so grab hold tight, watch close as I hold the kite. The light from the fire is enough to burn the skin, the one that separates when we're trapped within. The more I know, it seems the less I take, the more I give, it seems the less I relate. It's so easy to see how hard this can get, this job is bigger than anyone wants to admit. And I've heard all these voices keep a ringing in my head, the young, the old, the young, born and the dead, and they all say we're hanging by this tiny little thread. I won't be the one to cut quick to the end, I'd rather take it on with a battle cry. Try when you say you only live once, all the more reason why. Motivation keeps slipping, this path I keep tripping, clouds keep ripping the clear blue skies. Confused by the issues, the time passes by, the answer is the people making it, breaking it to survive. It's the earth and everything on it that suffers and dies. Come on people, slow down so we keep her alive. The people, it's all about the people. It's all about the people, the people, the people. It's all about the people. But is it all about the people? I said the people, it's all about the people. It's all about the people, the people, the people. It's all about the people. But is it all about the people?
Where do we start? Maybe here in the heart, with the ghettos and the people that have fallen apart. Been socially marked, engaged by the struggles of life. All parts of the same puzzle, but no pieces alike. Seeing the light by teaching how to read and to write. Beyond sentence, how we're speaking on our freedom of rights. Leading the fight, cause achieving is believing in sight. Bringing power to the people by making masses unite. It's for the good of mankind and misfortune and health. Of what can only be described by pains others have felt. And this promise isn't preaching, it's just asking for help. And I know nothing is impossible, but it's hard by myself, cause how can they build if they don't have the supplies? Large populations are starving, taking innocent lives. We need to revise, recognize in order to rise, cause the numbers of the suffering are only growing in size.
The people, it's all about the people. It's all about the people, the people. It's all about the people. But is it all about the people? I said the people, it's all about the people. It's all about the people, the people, the people. It's all about the people. But is it all about the people? The people, it's all about the people. It's all about the people, the people, the people. It's all about the people. But is it all about the people? I said the people, it's all about the people. It's all about the people, the people, the people. It's all about the people. But is it all about the people?
How we exhibit our sound to the people. How we exhibit our sound to the people.
youth in Gull Bay in northwestern Ontario are playing more hockey than they used to, the community has received a donation of nearly $18,000 in hockey equipment. That's thanks to the work of Gen 7 messenger Mike Uxie and the Big Hearts for Fresh Starts.
As it turned out, I was walking by one of the sort of pubs in my area here in Toronto, and one of my friends from high school and fellow transitional year program, U of T grads, just flagged me down. I jumped into the restaurant and said, "What's up?" and started talking about Gen 7 and promoting sports and pride in Aboriginal culture and stuff. And she said, "Oh, well, my roommate has his own, charitable foundation." And so that was the first contact point with Nick Vesio.
That's pretty awesome. And how did it go from there?
At that point, we just sort of started emailing and having phone conversations with Nick. And before you knew it, I had my friend who's the owner of a pickup truck, and we were loading 10 bags into the back of the truck. And next thing you know, we were at Front and Sherbourne, I think it is, at the Greyhound Courier. And next thing you know, we're in Thunder Bay at the Greyhound Courier Express, and then in Gull Bay.
Wow, $18,000 worth of equipment. That's a lot of stuff. So what all was in there?
Yeah, I don't know if I think $18,000 might have been a little bit high, but you know what? There was some really nice gear. There was some decent skates. There's never enough, but there was some all right skates, and like there was Easton shoulder pads, RBK shoulder pads, RBK shin pads. There wasn't too many sets of gloves or elbow pads, but Nick, he also supplied a bunch of helmets. We also didn't have sticks, so the money we saved on shipping costs, my other fellow Gen 7 messenger, Leah Salt, and I, we spent the remaining funds at Canadian Tire on sticks, pylons, tape. Obviously, we had to sift through the bags and get the skates sharpened as well, so... Mission accomplished.
Very cool. And how was Gull Bay chosen for the equipment?
Well, it goes back to how I was, how it came about hooking up with Gull Bay in the first place, where Leah is a full-time teacher there. And so at our yearly retreat, of which that was my first one, it sort of just came about that, maybe I'd be a good fit for that community with, my sports background, my hockey background, just as a male role model. But other than that, that's just the community that I started working with Gen 7.
What was the community's reaction?
They loved it. I mean, we had about 20 young people there, ranging from 4 to 15, and parents and a couple aunties and uncles and stuff like that. And yeah, they were thrilled. I mean, there was still lots of gear there, so hopefully some of the kids are lacing up and getting out on that ice.
So tell us a little bit about your work as a Gen 7 messenger.
All right, well, the Gen 7 program is part of Motivate Canada, and it's the Aboriginal role model program. And basically, I suppose in my words, which is also Gen 7's words, we work to promote pride in who we are as Aboriginal people, and really promote physical activity, sport, recreation, leisure, however that looks to everyone. If you ask me, I'm a hockey guy. I like practicing yoga. And, just going for walks, spending time with my friends, just it's different to everybody. And so, I think recreation saved my life. And I think it's a big key to our people and, regaining our vitality.
That was Mike Uxie, Gen 7 Messenger Volunteer for Motivate Canada. You've been listening to Bombsadel with Jennifer Ashwasige. Bombsida is an Aboriginal news magazine program which includes current affairs, arts and entertainment in a cross-genre of music from Aboriginal artists. Bombsida means walking together in the Anishinaabe language. Music for the program is courtesy of Burnt Project One. If you have comments or story ideas, visit my website at bombsida.com. That's B-A-M-O-S-E-D-A. And thanks for listening to Bombsida.